On this episode of the Fieldhouse Files, I'm sitting down with Tyler Marsh. He's coached at all levels and most recently on staff with the Pacers. Now he's in the WNBA working with Becky Hammon and the Las Vegas Aces. And welcome into the Fieldhouse Files, the podcast where I take you behind the scenes with the Pacers, talk to individuals on and around the team, and tell you what you need to know. I hope you all are having a great summer. I can't believe we are already into August, but things have finally slowed down some in the NBA world, and this is the time when executives and others really try to get away for at least a few weeks. And so for me, this downtime has enabled me to have more conversations with others around the league. And this past weekend, it was Tyler Marsh who was in town with the Las Vegas Aces, so we were able to talk at the team hotel. See, he spent the last two seasons with the Pacers as an assistant coach for player development, along with Calvert Chaney and Gennaro Pargo. Earlier this year, Jenny Busick recommended him to her close friend Becky Hammon to join her staff. She was named the head coach of the Las Vegas Aces, and then Hammon hired Marsh as one of her three assistant coaches. So now Marsh, who has coached at all these different levels, prep school to college to G League, NBA, and now the WNBA. And also, I should mention the Fort Wayne Mad Ants back in 2016. He won an NBA title with the Raptors in 2019. After the Pacers season ended in early April, he departed Indianapolis after just a couple days, headed to Las Vegas, and that's where he's been ever since. See, these are the conversations I love having. It's actually the reason why I launched this podcast back in 2015, to peel back the curtain, to introduce you to members of the team behind the team. And we haven't done as many of these as I'd like to recently, but I hope that picks up. Beginning today, it does, with Tyler Marsh. And then at the end, I'll share my audio from my interview with Becky Hammon after the game on Sunday afternoon, where I talked with her about Jenny Busick and then hiring Tyler Marsh. All right, sitting in a conference room, joined here by Tyler Marsh, former Pacers assistant coach, now doing big things with the Las Vegas Aces, in town for a pair of games as the Aces playing the Indiana Fever over at Hinkle Fieldhouse. We'll get into all of that. But Tyler, seems like it's been a whirlwind year for you. Many of the subjects we'll touch on this podcast, but just in general, how are things going for you? Coming off an all-star break, winning a Commissioner's Cup, still in the grind of a WNBA season.
Everything's been great, and I appreciate you for having me, and I can't ask for more of this transition from the NBA to the WNBA, from Indy to Vegas, from the Pacers to the Aces. It's been a great transition. Our organization has been great. Working for Becky Hammon has been great, and you know, it always helps when your team is good and your team is winning. And so that's made our transition easier, and my wife and I, we're enjoying it. We're enjoying this Vegas life.
And speaking of you and your wife, the other big thing is a baby boy coming into September, too, because you have nothing else going on. Why not?
Yeah, no doubt. We're both excited. I couldn't be more thrilled. We found out just before we made the move and kind of everything got into motion and into place. So yeah, you're right. Everything's been going from one thing to another, but it's all big blessings for sure.
So the season ends mid-April here with the Pacers, last couple games on the road. You basically, I think that weekend, head out to Las Vegas and get started. Is that basically what happened?
Yeah, it was about a two days in between that I had to get our stuff packed and out. And my wife kind of went out there a week early to Vegas to try to start looking for places to live. And I followed her shortly after that. And then it was just hitting the ground rolling. We ran right into training camp a week later. We had the draft as well. And yeah, the ball just kind of started moving pretty quickly, and it's been nonstop since.
Vegas can be fun, but in the summer, a little hot, as we're all used to with summer league and such. And you probably had such a busy schedule, you probably didn't. Were you able to connect with anyone during summer league while we were in town? I wish there was a game, by the way. I was disappointed. There was one, I think, that Thursday night, maybe. I got in Friday, so because I was going to show up, check you out, like, yep, Let's go. But it was right during a break.
Yeah, we played on the 6th, I think it was, and Summer League started the 7th or the 8th. So I was able to get one game in of Summer League, and then we flew out the next day heading to All-Star Weekend, and we were on the road right after that moving forward. So got to touch base with a few people who were in town earlier that week, and then kind of had to say my hellos and goodbyes at the same time. So but yeah, it was a good weekend though.
And for you, you completed the trifecta. I saw you post about that. You do the G League All-Star game in 2015, you did the NBA I think in 2020, and then the W. So you've experienced a lot in your time around basketball in the last decade or so.
Yeah, for sure. It's been a wealth of experience in a fairly short amount of time, I guess. My first year was in the G League in 2012, working for the Rio Grande Valley Vipers. It's the Houston Rockets Development League team, G League team now. And we were able to win a championship there and able to be part of a championship team in Toronto in 2019. And so I'm hoping I can help another trifecta come to fruition and help bring Vegas their first title. So I've just been incredibly blessed to be able to be around great coaches and great players and great organizations, and anywhere that I can kind of fit in to add value is kind of what I'm looking to do. So it's been great.
One thing I did want to go back to is your first couple weeks in Vegas. I thought something that was really cool, Jenny Busick was out there for a couple weeks with you guys as you guys were able to hang out, and she was able to be there with Becky and yourself. And so what was it like having her there as well?
She's been awesome. I'm not sure that any of this would have kind of came to fruition without Jenny, but even before, so she's been a great friend throughout the time of knowing her with the Pacers, and she's helped introduce me to a lot of people and kind of initiate and cultivate some good relationships there. And she's been by my side since day one, so I'll always be appreciative of her for sure.
And I thought that was the one of the telling points too, is you didn't have a pre-existing relationship with Becky before this all started, right? And we all know of Becky, of course, but mm-hmm. Take me through, I think it was around the All-Star game of the NBA in mid-February or so when a lot of this started to go down. Mm-hmm. How did conversations get started? And I think you even went out there to check things out.
Yeah, well, actually, I met her when we played earlier during the season, and it was kind of stale in terms of, the prospective job, and that kind of stuff didn't really get started until later in the season, as you mentioned, and it was kind of fast paced at first, and then things kind of slowed down for a while, and because we were both kind of tied up into our individual seasons, and when things started to pick back up, the ball kind of got moving pretty quickly in terms of that communication between myself and Coach Carlisle and the staff and the organization here with the Pacers, as well as with Becky. But our conversation was a lot more personal than professional, I would say. It was more so just getting to know each other. And Becky's someone that really values the integrity of an individual and a prospective coworker and whatnot. And so we really connected and clicked on a personal level before anything, and I think that's important to as you ease into the transition of working together in a professional realm. It always makes that transition easier when you kind of collect on a personal, moral, and value standpoint, and that's kind of where things started for us.
She had, of course, been on the bench under Greg Popovich for the last decade or so, both being in the NBA for a while now. Kind of speak that language, so that does make a lot of sense. Let's get to know each other as humans. What would it be like to work with each other?
Sure.
What's your philosophy on different things? Let's get back to Pacers for just a little bit. You spent a couple years with the team. Two of the most unusual years, too. You have two different staffs. It's all during COVID, so you have different COVID protocols during that. What was your time like with the Pacers? And I even read where you grew up a Pacers fan, mm-hmm. So this meant a lot to you.
Yeah, it was really unique. I moved all over the place growing up. My dad's a college basketball coach, has been one my entire life. And so we moved around a bunch growing up. So I never really had a home team, so to speak, that I would consider like most people. But so I just started liking players, and that kind of branched into who my favorite teams are. I'm a huge baseball fan, and I'm a big Chipper Jones fan, so I'm a diehard Atlanta Braves fan for life.
But they're doing well, right?
They are. They
don't follow, but
World Series champions last year. We're hoping to go back-to-back this year.
That'd be awesome for you.
But I really gravitated to Reggie Miller. I'm a huge Reggie Miller fan. And so at a young age in elementary and middle school, Pacers were my team growing up and have been. And kind of a quiet Pacers fan prior to joining the staff here. But everyone says it's a dream come true, but it was really more than a job to me once I got hired from the Pacers. I spent some time with the Mad Ants, their G League team, back in 2016-17 season, and I didn't think it could get much better than that. And when I was able to join the staff of the Pacers, that was just it was truly a blessing and truly a dream come true. But my 2 years here was, the forget about the wins and losses. It was just the Pacers are class A organization from top to bottom, and the way that they embraced me and the way that the community embraced myself and my wife was great, and couldn't ask for more during my time here for sure.
How about you had the title of player development. How about your personal development over the last couple of years in terms of your role? What more were you able to learn and provide? I think in Toronto you did probably more video, mm-hmm. whereas here it was geared more towards player development, which means one-on-one with the players, which is the focus for any team. So.
Sure. I think that coming into that first year with Coach Bjorkgren, we kind of had a pre-established relationship during our time in Toronto, and then I worked for him a couple of years in the G League as well. And so he trusted me with a lot in that first year here with Indiana. I understood his system and his philosophy and what he wanted to bring to the Pacers, and thought he did a great job during his time here. And so the player development aspect of it was more so developing relationships for me personally, getting to know the players and developing a trust with them. I think that they were able to see that I kind of knew what I was talking about in terms of what the system would be, and kind of having a knowledge of that already coming into it. So it was more establishing those personal connections and that trust there. And then the second year with Coach Carlisle, that was kind of a brand new start for all of us, myself and a couple of the other player development coaches that were kept on staff. And so now we had to learn a new staff, a new way of doing things, while still having existing relationships with the players who returned from year one. And so trying to help bridge that gap and help Coach Carlisle feel comfortable with us and know that we were all on board for what he wanted to do and wanted to bring here. That was something that we were all kind of in cohesion with. So we just wanted to make sure that Coach Carlisle knew that we were here for him and we were here for these players and for this organization.
In that first year under Nate, did you kind of view yourself a little bit as, I don't know if translator is the best way, because you already knew what he wanted,
sure.
and that type of stuff. So you could both relay that more so to players, but even some of the own staff who are still trying to maybe come to grips with what type of things he wants run. Did you know what I'm saying there?
No doubt. I think for... I guess you could call me, the spokesperson for the most part for a good chunk of that first year. Just being able to relay the message from a player standpoint, to the rest of the coaching staff, like you said, even to the training staff, and just for everyone to hopefully get on the same page with what was going on and what was expected of us. But again, a new organization as well, so there were still some learning curves there for myself and Coach Bjorkgren as well. So I think all across the board, it was just it took some time to get things into place with how we wanted to have things go. So
my takeaway from that year will be how practice schedule was always severely impacted and more so dictated mm-hmm. by, I think, testing schedule and not necessarily when you or your coaching staff and that mm-hmm. type of thing wants to do it. And also just the visual image of Nate never coaching in front of a full crowd mm-hmm. and never coaching without a mask. Mm-hmm. From that standpoint, it was just the most unusual season.
Yeah, it was an adjustment period for everyone, for all parties involved. And I think we did what we could do with the circumstances given, both from a players and coaching aspect. And that's kind of the name of the game. Moving forward, it's always going to be some sort of adjustments that you have to get used to. Even going into this season, both NBA and WNBA, there's still teams battling COVID. There's teams battling injuries. There's, in the WNBA, you're still battling for places to practice at and sometimes places to play at.
Sure.
So there's always some type of adjustment that's going to need to be made, and that's the business that we're in as coaches anyway. And for players, you have your adjustments that you have to make on the fly, both on and off the court as well. So the teams that are able to do that seamlessly are the ones that are left standing at the end.
It's a big cliche, but it's also one because it's true. It's just control what you can control, and
sure.
a lot of that completely out of your hands. One thing I think fans would be interested in is how you get paired with players. Before games, the guys I saw you with a lot was Caris LeVert, Chris mm-hmm. Duarte, Jalen Smith, for example. Mm-hmm. Let's take this previous team. Mm-hmm. Is that Rick assigning in? Is that you just building a relationship with a guy so he wants you pregame? What is that like?
Yeah, it was kind of a group effort. That first year with Nate, he was more on a rotational basis so that we can kind of get – to know the players on another level and kind of have a rotation of kind of a cycle of player coach relationships. And then with Coach Carla, we kind of stuck to our guys for most of the year. We were pretty much paired up at the start of the year, and it kind of just progressed throughout the year as roster changes were made. We just kind of filled in where we could and started having our own player to coach relationship and stuck with what was working, and that's how we rolled.
I think if I was a player, that's what I would want, because you build that familiarity. I'm a very routine oriented person. Mm-hmm. I would want the same guy, the same warm up. So I totally get that. Mm-hmm. You take this past season, the fascinating stat I always go back to is that there were more players on the roster because of COVID than wins with how things turned out this past year. So that adds a different layer of guys coming and going. You're with Karis for, you know, 3 months and then he's gone, or those sorts of things. I also saw you several times on the computer pregame. You're sitting on the bench. You were doing some. What were those tasks that you were spending that time on?
Yep, that could be a number of things. We had a video coordinator, Dylan DeBusk, who did an amazing job in the video room, and any chance that that I was able to kind of help him with stuff that he had, whether it was cutting a game or creating edits or anything like that, I would try to step in and take some of the load off his shoulders as well. But that could be anything from organizing player film that we had to maybe it could have been a game that was my scout and my responsibility, so I could have been making some edits there. So it could be a number of things when you see that.
How about watching film? We see it a lot, some far more public, like Ron and Tyrese always courtside before the game, but I know a lot of that also happens behind the scenes. How much more have you seen players maybe embrace or want to view film? And I think in talking with Jenny, a lot of that might be shorter segments. It might not be an hour session. Mm-hmm. Instead, it's more 15 minutes twice at practice because of the shorter attention spans.
Yeah, you try to hit them with the key points. You're not trying to overload it with them, especially on a game day. There's some players who are, like you mentioned earlier, are very routine based, and they don't want to absorb a bunch of information right before they're about to get on the court, because a lot of times that film that's being showed is from the previous game more so than the upcoming game. And so they kind of want to move past that, and you hit them when you can. And there's certain players like Malcolm Brogdon, who he hates watching individual film on game days. He likes watching them on off days or practice days or what have you. So you try to have that stuff organized and understand what each player's tendencies are and what they prefer, and you just kind of roll with that.
So now with your current role, we hit on the past. Now the present, you move from back of bench, you're front of bench, you take on way more responsibilities. What are some of those, and how are you developing even more now?
Yeah, I think that your development in the WNBA kind of progresses a little more quickly, just because it's such short staffed as compared to the NBA. So it's more hands on deck in every facet. And so that's been a great experience. It's something that I was kind of used to from my time in the G League, because it's short staffed there as well. And this is just amped up to another level. You have top tier athletes in the WNBA, and there's a lot that's put on the shoulders of our assistant coaching staff that Becky trusts us with. And so, yeah, it's been kind of a well-rounded experience. There's all hands on deck with all players involved, and we each have our positions and our players that we kind of zone in on and focus on. But at the end of the day, it's only three of us as assistants on staff, so we try to help in wherever we can.
And for context, with the Pacers, there were three player development coaches.
Correct.
Not assistant player development in particular. So, yeah, I mean, the travel party, I want to say, is like 50 for the Pacers. For a WNBA team, it's probably a little bigger than when I was there. Probably 22 would be my guess about that. And one big difference that you probably miss the most is the chartered flights, right?
No doubt. No doubt. This, well, hopefully that's something that can change sooner rather than later, because it takes a toll for sure on these players' bodies. And again, they're in the top tier of what they do. And so anything that we can do to help preserve and protect the product is what we should focus on. So
you guys have been kind of the leaders of the pack, leaders of the WNBA. You're coming off a win of the Commissioner's Cup, and what that, the money monetarily, what that means for the players and different things. What has it been like to enjoy some success with this new start? Because in this situation, I mean, Rick said it right when you left, this is a high profile situation that also brings on a greater task. Has it lived up to that? And How well have you guys seemingly handled that?
Yes, everything about our organization is first class and high profile. It starts with being in Las Vegas, for sure.
Sure.
but then it goes all the way, it goes to our owner and Mark Davis, who really values the WNBA. He really values women's sports. He really values our team. And he's at every game courtside, every home game. He was at the Commissioner's Cup. And so he's super supportive, and I think that goes a long way with Coach Hammond and with our players. And then that kind of mindset is just passed on down. This goes to our president and Nikki Fargus. It goes to our head coach and Becky Hammond, and then on down to our players from all 1 through 12. And the early success has really helped kind of promote Becky's philosophy and what we want to do and the style of play that she wanted to incorporate, and having that early success kind of breeded confidence in that change, because it's a total 180 change of style and style of play from what Vegas was used to in the past with Coach Lambeer, who did an outstanding job. But our players have bought in. They've come together, and they are as close a knit team as I've been around, and they've really embraced both Becky and myself as well in our entire coaching staff. So it's been an incredible transition.
Has it been fun to be kind of on the ground floor, the foundational level of what Becky and Mark Davis and all are trying to establish with this Las Vegas Aces team?
No doubt. It's been great, and I think that the writing is on the wall for what our goals and aspirations are, and that's what we preach every day, that we want to have a championship mindset. And win or lose, we want to make sure that we're sticking to the process and sticking to the things that we want done and doing things the right way and being great teammates both on and off the court. And we let everything else kind of fall where it may.
This weekend, you're playing a pair of games at Hinkle Fieldhouse. Very unusual with Fever not really having a true home court. They played, I think it was 4 at Gainbridge and 9 at the Coliseum, and these final 4 at Hinkle. You have any good Hinkle memories from growing up, or vice versa, too, going in there? Did you do anything hilarious, like take out the ladder or anything like that from Hoosiers, which I'm sure you're aware of?
So, you know, we live in a day of Instagram and social media, so I had to add to my Instagram story. Just that was my first time in Hinkle, so
I was
just excited as anyone. Yeah, my first time.
Wow. Okay.
So had the Hoosiers background music playing in this Instagram story and whatnot, and I texted my dad, and he said make sure the rims are 10 feet. So it's Hoosiers is one of my favorite movies of all time. So it was a great experience being in there.
I'm surprised by that, but you gave me a perfect segue to your father, Donnie, who I think a lot of fans in this state are very familiar with, especially for when he was on staff with Mike Davis down in Bloomington and still with him at Detroit Mercy, which is awesome. What kind of influence was he directly in terms of just basketball and getting into coaching? And I'm also wondering, did he try to sway you from it? Like Nate McMillan always told me how he did with Jamel. He's like, do not get into this. I do not do it. And guess what? Now they're working together.
It's funny. I was just on my way up here, I was just talking to someone about that, and I remember going to Final Fours with my dad growing up, and as I started getting older and moving out of college and started getting into to coaching profession, everyone would always ask me if I wanted to get into coaching and why I wanted to get into coaching, and they would always shake their heads and look at my dad and then be like, well, I don't know why you would let him be a part of this. But I saw the impact that he had as a coach and still has as a coach to this day, the impact that he has on young men off the court more than anything. And, you know, the relationships that he's able to establish and maintain over the course of his coaching career kind of drove me to wanting to get into the profession, and knowing that it's more than just the X's and O's at the end of the day. You want to have a profound impact on these players, men or women, moving forward and have them hold on to something that they can pass down moving forward as well.
You haven't coached high school, right?
I coached prep school for a year in North Carolina. So
I was going to say, so then you've covered all the ground. And to that point, you've worked hard at this. Like, you have committed to it. You have not just been given a handout and here, join my staff, anything like that. Mm-hmm. Prep school, G League, University of Alabama for a couple of years. Then the Pacers, now with the W. Like, are you astounded still a little bit of your path and what it's taken to get here and how much further you want to go?
For sure. I think more so than anything, I want to be purposeful. I want to be purposeful and impactful, and I'm not tied to putting myself in a box into I'm only an NBA coach, I'm only a WNBA coach, I'm only a college coach. I want to be a leader. I want to be, if that's a leader of men, if that's a leader of women, I want to be someone that can be looked up to in the way that they just approach life and treat people. And basketball is my caveat into doing that. And I love people. I have a passion for personal relationships. I have a passion for the game of basketball, and coaching is the greatest bridge of the two. So that was my prayer into making this transition into the W, is to be in a position where I can be impactful both with our staff and with our players. And it's been looking that way thus far. So I'm proud of where I'm at, and I'm proud of the people who I'm surrounded by, and the friends and the family that support me as well. And for that, I couldn't be more thankful.
That's pretty cool. Appreciate you sharing. Yeah, like, it seems like the new age coach, they're not talking about their offense right away or mm-hmm. what they want to. They're like, no, look, we want to understand our players. Mm-hmm. We want to not cater to them, but make things work to them. It's not our style. It's what works for this team. And mm-hmm. it seems like you very much reflect that, and that's where you and others are moving towards.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the state of where the world is at right now. These the young players, they want to be heard and they want to be understood, and as coaches, it's our job to be that ear, to listen to that, and to help facilitate their needs as best as possible, so we can move forward in the same direction.
On your way out of Brooklyn, you were delivered the game ball by Rick Carlisle. What did that mean to you, to kind of put a bow on, I think, the last couple of years, and as you said, a franchise that you were proud of and a fan of growing up?
That experience was undescribable. It was totally caught off guard. I'm thankful that I was able to kind of keep my emotions in check in the time in front of the players and everything. But it was truly a special moment that I won't forget. And it always helps to know that you're appreciated for not just for what you do, but for who you are. And I'm thankful to Coach Carlisle and the entire organization, the entire staff for. Not just for this year, and because he didn't have to keep me on staff. He took the time to understand who I was and how I can bring value to this team. And I'm forever appreciative and grateful for that.
That's a good point, because that's one of the first things I think of when a coach gets fired. Less care about the head coach. He's got millions of dollars, whoever it is. It's the staff. It's the director of media relations. It's the physical therapist. It's the massage therapist. Mm-hmm. Because inevitably, there are changes when a head coach or general manager, for that matter.
Sure.
What is that like for a coach and someone on staff when maybe for at least a couple weeks you feel like you're hanging in the balance, unsure of your future?
Sure. Well, I've seen it up close and personal, just with my dad growing up and different staffs that he was a part of, and the transition of him going from program to program or team to team, and then it was my turn to be part of it.
Yeah.
And I think every coach has his or her turn to go through a situation like that, and it can be a little unsettling at times, but you hopefully have a good support system around you that can kind of keep you encouraged and positive throughout the time. And during that whole transition from Coach Bjorkman to Coach Carlisle, I made sure to be around and be visible and let the Pacers brass know that I want to be here no matter who's in place. And the Pacers is where I want to be. They embraced me like their own at the time, and I was willing to do whatever was necessary to stay on staff and be part of Coach Carlisle's staff. So,
how much in your development is it also starting to use your voice more, whether it's on the court? I know Rick's, it's seemingly, from what I've heard, very good about stepping back a little bit at times and letting an assistant coach, whether handle a drill mm-hmm. or lead them through something. Now with the Aces, I'm sure you're doing that mm-hmm. way more, and that's probably been huge in you taking charge and taking a hold of a task.
Yeah, I'm just more naturally, my personality is more quick to listen and slow to speak. I speak when need to be spoken up for, and but that's an area that for sure comes out on a smaller staff and with more responsibility. Yeah. But it's been great. Again, Becky had places a lot on my shoulders and trying to take that ball and run with it. But yeah, it's been a good experience.
We've jammed like three NBA seasons into what's felt like one. You decided to go a step further and jam the WNBA. So
right.
You've basically had like four seasons in probably what's felt like a couple years. Mm-hmm. Then you got a kid in September. I was going to say, what do you got next, you know, after the W? But it's probably all baby and family time after that, right?
Yeah, so the last possible day of the WNBA season, that's championship included, would be September 21st. And
okay.
our due date is September 22nd. So it's again, it's one thing to another, and hopefully it's the 21st and the 22nd. There's two championships involved, and with the baby and with the WNBA championship. So
that would be outstanding. Get some hardware and
a
baby, healthy baby boy delivered. Well, thank you so much for joining me, taking time out of your day here, and good to have you back in Indy for a couple games. And I'm still stunned, but happy that you're able to now get your Hinkle experience after all these years.
For sure. No, I appreciate you having me, Scott, and you were always a great resource during my 2 years here, so I appreciate it for sure.
That's Tyler Marsh, now an assistant coach of the Las Vegas Aces.
You and Jenny obviously have something really special.
Yeah.
Tell me about that relationship, and also how maybe you guys helped each other take your unique paths over the last decade or so.
Oh, man. Well, first of all, we've been friends for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. So there's not very many people that you could say that about. We've just formed a bond and friendship that I think surpasses anything that basketball-wise, I mean. But I definitely, you know, when I think of things, I definitely pick up the phone, call her, pick her brain a little bit about basketball stuff, but it's a much deeper friendship for us than that. So super happy to see what she's doing. She's a super bright basketball mind, and just a really loyal friend, really, and somebody who, like I said, when the going gets tough, on or off the court, she's a person that I pick up the phone and call.
You guys have each other.
Oh yeah.
In terms of Tyler, you guys, I don't think, had a relationship until somewhat recently. What went into you hiring him?
Well, he came very highly recommended from Jenny.
Yeah, not surprising.
So, and he's been, I mean, he's got a really great eye. I really trust his eyes out there. He sees things live and in action. He's not a coach that has to go back and look at film. He can give you live, relevant information that can help you win the game in the moment. And so I've just tried to empower him to use his voice and speak up. He knows his stuff. He knows what he's talking about. And I think the girls have a really tremendous amount of respect for him and what he brings to the table. So he's kind of been in charge with our player personnel. He helps me a lot on the offensive end. But just another person who's a rock solid person, first and foremost. So it's always nice to have those kind of people that you can fall back on as a coach, because a lot of times, you know, you can feel exposed out there, and those people that have your back, like Tyler, like my other coaches, are something that's really invaluable. And just learning and growing together. You know, I'm a first year head coach, and so you know, I've always asked them when I come in with things, I'm like, you need to tell me why not. Why poke holes in my theory?
Sure.
I'll throw something out there. I'm like, go tear it apart. And you know, that's kind of how we just iron sharpens irons. But you know, he's been again somebody that I can't really quantify the impact and how good he's been. He's been really good.
He has a calm demeanor. So you talked about empowering him to use his voice. Was that any bit of a challenge maybe early on? Hey, speak up. I want you to take more.
Yeah, I mean, I want you to have your own ideas. Yeah. You know, I want you to be, all our meetings should be interactive. Okay. You know, it shouldn't be just me talking or whatever. Like, you need to, everybody, not just Tyler, but everybody speak up. You have a voice, you need to use it. And I want different ideas. I don't want a bunch of people just agreeing with everything I say, you know? And so I think that's how we come up with the best game plan, best schemes, is when everybody has a voice. And then whatever we decide, you know, the I got your back piece comes in. Because maybe somebody didn't like, oh, we should have done this, we should have done that. But when we go out there, we are a collective group and we have each other's back. And so when we present to the team, there's no cracks. We're rock solid in what we're doing and how we're teaching it and how we're relaying the information to our team.
Thanks for listening to the Fieldhouse Files podcast, and I'll talk to you again soon.